portion goes into the commandment that Hashem gave to the Jewish people, to Moshe, to the Jewish people, that they should take revenge against the Midianites. And this is a throwback to the end of Parshas Balak and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas a couple of weeks ago, where we know when Balak from the country of Midian, from the country of Moab, the king of Moab, hired and commissioned Bilam, the sorcerer, to curse the Jewish people and to derail the Jewish people, to derail them. That was the plan, and it failed because the curses that Bilam tried to utter against the Jewish people reversed and turned around to become blessings instead. But they did succeed at the very end of Parshas Balak. There is the episode there, the very, very tragic, terrible episode of the success that they both had in derailing the Jewish people partially. Because what did they do? They seduced them with harlotry. And Midianite women and Moabite women were introduced. They came to the camp and they seduced the Jewish men. In the aftermath of that, after that was already all over, that's where our commandment in this parasha comes into play, that Hashem told Moshe that now there's a commandment to take revenge and to avenge the Midianites specifically, not the Moabites. And the reason for that is because Moab, the country of Moab, had a little bit of pretexture because Rus, we've learned that before, Rus came from Moab and David HaMelech, etc. So Moab had a certain degree of protection. And the revenge against these two countries was only targeted towards Midian and Midian only. And that's why we have in the parasha this week, Perek Lamed Aleph, 31, Pasuk Gimel, for Yedaba Moshe L'Ha'am, Moshe spoke to the people saying, Hecholtzu mi'itachem anashim l'tzava, arm men from among yourselves for the legion, that they may be against Midian, to inflict Hashem's vengeance against Midian, to inflict vengeance against Midian for the terrible sin that they committed with the Jewish people. And that's the commandment, to avenge Midian. So further down in that passage, in Pasuk Zion, it says, Vayitzbu'u al Midian, and they masked themselves, they followed the instructions, the command of Hashem, Vayitzbu'u al Midian, and they massed themselves against Midian, v'yitzbu'u. They massed themselves, they made themselves like an army against Midian, kashatziva Hashem, as Hashem commanded this Moshe, v'yaharagu kol zoch, and they killed every male of Midian, which is a mind-boggling thing to think about that by itself. But they massed themselves against Midian, they attacked Midian, and they killed Midian, and that's the pasuk we're going to zoom in on, right? That one pasuk. Exactly what does that mean? For Yitzbu al Midian. So on the surface, pretty innocuous, nothing really sensational about the Pasuk. However, on this Pasuk, the Sifri is the Medrash, right? It's the Medrash Halacha, Medrash on the Psukim. So the Sifri says that Hakifuha Misholesh Ruchusaha, that they were to surround Midian on three sides, right? Surround Midian on three sides. And again, the details of this is beyond the scope of the discussion, exactly the actual tactics and methodologies they were using. But it says, Hakifu Misholesh Ruchusaha, they were to surround themselves around Midian from three different directions. And Reb Nosson the sage and the Sifri says, give to them one direction, one side that they can flee. Make sure that one side of the siege is open, that they have an escape route. Right? That's Reb Nosson. That's what the Medrash says. So that's what it says when it says in the Pasuk that they did besiege them. They besieged them on all four sides but one, because one side they were given an escape route that the Midianites could escape. And that's, you know, canonized as part of the Medrash, to have this escape route that they shouldn't be completely 100% surrounded on all four sides. So this actually is the source of a fascinating discussion, a fascinating actually a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, Nachmanides and Maimonides. So Maimonides, the Rambam, in the Mishneh Torah, in Hilchas Melachim, in the laws of kings and warfare. So he writes as follows. He says, Keshetzorin al ir letofsa, when the Jewish people besiege a city to attack it, to take it, the law is, the Rambam says, Ein makifin usam ma'arba ruchusecha. They're not to surround the city from all four directions, Ela mishalish ruchusecha, but only from three directions. That's the halacha. The law is, make sure to give one direction that the enemy can escape via. Umanichin makam, they're supposed to give a place, lebareach, for someone to run away. And for anybody who wants to go away, to run away, al nasha, for his life. As it says in the Rambam, quotes this pasuk, v'yitzbu al Midyan, that they massed themselves around Midyan, exactly as Hashem commanded Moshe, and m'pia shmua, based upon the oral tradition, lamdu shebekach tivo, from the oral tradition, the Torah shebal peh, we learn that that's what they did, that they encircled them, not from all four directions, but from three directions to give them an escape route. That's halacha. That's a law in the laws of war. In the laws of war, there's a discussion exactly what kind of war this is. There's a fundamental distinction between what's called a milchemes mitzvah and a milchemes rishus. Milchemes mitzvah is a war which is commanded by Hashem against the Canaanites, the land of Israel. Milchemes rishus is a war of expansion. A war of expansion where the Jewish people were able to fight wars to expand the boundaries. So this halacha about how severe and how intense should this battle be to be able to give them this opportunity to escape is a machlokas whether or not it applies to Milchamas Mitzvah, Milchamas Rishos, but that's a different discussion. But what's the psychology of it? What's the psychology of it? It's very obvious, right? The psychology is, as the Meshach Chochma of Mes Simcha of Davinsk explains, he said the psychology is Shim Yakifu Osam called Sad, because if you surround them from all four directions, Umes Yashim Bechayim, and they despair of their lives, the enemy is in despair and is panicking. Ki Yiplu Biyad Sad, that they're now going to fall to the enemy. What are they going to do? Yam du al nashon, they're going to stand up on their lives, because she'eris kochem, with every last ounce of strength, for yuchlu lasus chayil, and be able to fight much more viciously and ferociously to attack the invading army. Kashe yadu b'koras itim, as we know from experience, from stories of wars and military warfare, shekama pa'amim ba megodol yish, because many times there comes from the tremendous despair of Nitzuach, of a Nitzuach HaGol, from a victory, for a potential victory of the enemy, it just fortifies the victim, the army which is being invaded, it fortifies them with tremendous strength and motivation and determination to fight back to save themselves. So as a strategy in war, the Jewish people are commanded, make sure, don't put the enemy in a position, in a psychological place that they're going to fight so strong that they're going to fight and defeat you. Give them a space, give them a direction to run out, to run away from. It's a ploy, a psychological ploy in warfare. It's called, don't put them in a position where they have no choice. Don't put them into a position where they have no choice. The expression is called burning your bridges. When they feel that there's no choice left, there's no other, the bridges have been burned for their own safety and salvation. So therefore that just strengthens them even more. And therefore, the Jewish people are commanded, don't put Midian into that place where their bridges are burned and they're going to be so invigorated and fortified to fight against you and you'll lose, right? That's how the Rambam learns it. That's how the Rambam understands this. Meaning to say, again, it's a strategy. It's a very tactful, logical, sensible strategy in warfare to make sure that you win, right? That's the Rambam's understanding of it. Now, the Ramban, it's known, right? It's known that the Nachmanides and Maimonides, they were at the same time period from the Rishonim. It's known that the Ramban, Nachmanides, took issue with different points of the Rambam in his enumeration of mitzvahs. So without belaboring the point too long, 613 mitzvahs altogether. We know there's no debate about that. That the Gemara says there are 613 mitzvahs. There's a little bit of wiggle room and debate among the Rishonim about certain mitzvahs and certain principles. Were they part of the 613 mitzvahs? Are they subcategories of other mitzvahs? And it's a machlokas. And the Ramban has a debate and argues with the Rambam in many places. I didn't realize this until I saw this morning. But at the end of the work called the Sefer HaMitzvahs is the list of, is the Rambam's list of the mitzvahs. At the end of the of his Sefer HaMitzvahs, there's a section over here, and it's called, the title of it is this, Mitzvahs Sheshokach Osan Harav Mitzvahs Asay. Mitzvahs which the Rambam forgot to list as one of the 613 commandments. This is authored by the Ramban Nachmanides, who took issue with him with certain mitzvahs. And the title of the section is Mitzvah, the Forgotten Mitzvahs of the Rambam. Maimonides' Forgotten Mitzvahs. Now, again, no one debates 613. And there's always going to be a final tally of 613. It's just what goes into that list of 613. But the Ramban says there are certain mitzvahs which the Rambam forgot to put in. And he disagrees with him. And one of them is this pasuk over here. One of them is this pasuk of his, mitzvah number 5. And he says, the Ramban writes, Shenitztavinu, that we're commanded, Keshenotso al-ir, that when we besiege a city, Lahaniach achas menaruchos, to leave one side open, Beli motzu, without any siege, Shemyirtsu livroach, that if they want, they can flee and escape, so far the same, Yilehem derech lonus misham, to have a place to flee from there. Why? Ki bezeh nilmud lahanhaga bechemla, in order that we should learn how to be merciful, in order that we should learn how to conduct ourselves with mercy, afilu im ayuvenu be'esel melchama, even with our enemies at a time of war. And the Ramban says they're not disagreeing with the fact that it has to be done, but they're actually disagreeing on two. He disagrees on two points. Number one, it should be a mitzvah. It should be counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs. And moreover, why is it a mitzvah? Because it's teaching us chemla, mercy, and compassion, even upon our enemies in the time of war. So the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. Said the whole purpose of this, you know, law, so to speak, is it's a military strategy, right, to prevent the enemy from fortifying their motivation to fight against the incoming army. It was a military strategy. That's the Rambam's understanding of it. The Ramban says, no, it's not because of military strategy. It's because of to inculcate inside of the Jewish people and to have within the Jewish people, the Jewish army, a trait of mercy, even against the enemies, that they should treat the enemies with mercy. And the Meshech Chochmah says that, in explaining the Ramban over here, that this is akin to a pasuk later on in Devarim, in Devarim 20:10, where there the Torah says that when the Jewish people go into Eretz Israel and conquer the indigenous peoples over there, that they should offer overtures of peace towards them. Overtures of peace. The Jewish people and the Jewish army were not brutal. We're not supposed to be brutal and merciless. We're supposed to have mercy and compassion. And this, the Ramban says, is the commandment to make sure that they have one side to flee from. And if they have one side to flee from, it's not just a simple strategy, a military strategy. It's an expression of mercy and compassion and kindness towards the enemy. It's a remarkable idea. I mean, that's really, when you just think about that, who this applies to, again, I'm not sure. I didn't go through it completely. What kind of enemy it applies to, not 100% sure, but it's really fascinating to have this degree of mercy, like of mercy upon an enemy. The truth is, it's not too far away from us, because we learned, you know, this past week on Wednesday night in the Navi class in Sefer Shmuel in chapter 24, we saw an example of this, right? We saw an example of this kind of mercy with the enemy. Because what happened, right, to remind ourselves, what happened with chapter 24 of Shmuel Aleph is the episode where Shaul is in the cave when he's chasing after David, and he comes to the caves of En Gedi. And he's hiding in the caves, not hiding. He actually go. The pasuk says he's going into the bathroom, using the bathroom to relieve himself inside one of the caves of En Gedi. And while he's there, David was there. David knew he was there. David and his men were there. And David had the opportunity to kill him, to literally kill him. And he chose not to kill him. And instead of killing him, the pasuk says, "V'yokum David v'yichris is kanafa mi'il." The David rose up and he cut the corner of his garment that Shaul was wearing. He didn't want to kill him. He had to put in his, actually his soldiers argued with him. And they said, "You should have killed him. He's trying to kill you. You should kill him." And he chose not to kill him. And the reason is, one of the reasons given is because he had compassion. He had mercy upon him. And he saw that he was a very modest man. He was covering himself when he went to the bathroom, when he was in the cave. He was conducting and he was righteous. I mean, we know that Shaul was a righteous man. But David had this compassion on him. That was one of the reasons given. The Mesillas Yesharim, the Ramchal in Mesillas Yesharim quotes this in Perek 19 of Mesillas Yesharim. It talks about the trait of chesedus, of piety. And he's talking about chesed, kindness, and rachmanus, and mercy. And the Ramchal says, David hayimisala b'midasizo satova. David praised himself for this tremendous trait of mercy and compassion. Shafil l'sonov hayimishtadl l'hated. That even towards his enemies, those who hated him, he endeavored to bestow goodness to them. And he quotes one of the psukim in Tehillim, which references that event, is Perek Zion Pasuk Hay of Tehillim, where it says, "Im gemalti shol mira v'achaltza tzori reikon." I've released those who torment me. I've released those who torment me. I've allowed them to go free. It's a reference to Shaul. He let them to go free. So you know, David is the paragon, a paragon of kindness, a paragon of piety, a paragon of mercy. And even he, with his enemies, he's merciful. Now, again, it's not across the board. I mean, there are many times we saw with Golias, he killed him. So there are many situations where he kills his enemies, right? But apparently there are certain situations where it's proper to behave this way. But the lesson we're learning from this is the mercy. The Ramban says, that's the point of the pasuk. That's the point of the commandment, to leave one side open for the enemy to flee. And moreover, it's a mitzvah zaseh. It's one of the 613 commandments, really bringing to the top, to the fore, the concept of mercy and the concept of having compassion and mercy towards enemies in the right circumstances. Because I say that with that caveat, in the right circumstances. I'm not delving into the parameters of this. The purpose right now is more to gain the principle, that to underscore the idea that we are Rachmanim, we have compassion, we have mercy. The Gemara says that the three traits which are the hallmarks of the Jewish people, we are Gomli Chasadim, the Jewish people are known for their chesed, they bestow kindness, they're known for their shame, they have a sense of shame, and also they're known for their Rachmanis, for their mercy, and this is the trait of the Jewish people, Rachmanis. So that's the Machlokas, right? Is this Pasuk of leaving one side open, is that just a military strategy and a good advice and it's a required thing? Or is it even a mitzvah zaseh, a positive commandment? That's the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, right? So another quote from chapter 24, Shmuel, of what we learned this past week, another quote, because it's relevant, is in that perek, there's an expression used of it. It's actually the only time this is used in Tanakh ever. And it says, Mishal HaKadmoni. So leaving the context aside from now, but it says, Mishal HaKadmoni is an expression, the ancient proverb says, Rashi says, what it's referring to the Torah itself, Mishal HaKadmoni, the ancient proverb of the world is the Torah, because it is the mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is the proverbs of Hashem, the Torah, the proverbs of Hashem. So the Torah is described as the Mishal HaKadmoni, the proverbs of the ancient one, the proverbs of Hashem is the Torah. Why is it called that way? Because the Torah is the blueprint. Because the Torah is the blueprint of reality. The Torah is the source of everything. Hafachbo v'avachbo dekulibo. Turn it around. Everything is in the Torah. No matter what question you have, you'll find everything in the Torah. That's the expression, Mishal HaKadmoni. The Torah is the Mishal HaKadmoni. It's funny because when there's somebody that I frequently speak to about my webinars, right? The webinars, which I do. So I'm always looking for topics which are in the news and which are in the headlines. And for example, this one, which we're doing in a few weeks from now, on assassinations. So this person, he says to me frequently, he says, well, does the Torah have anything to say about that? You know, what's the Torah, you know, what's the rabbi going to speak about? So I have to, I always remind him, I said, don't you know, the Torah, everything is in the Torah. Hafach b'vahach, turn it around, because the Torah is life. The Torah is the Yetzer Chaim. The Torah has everything in it. How every single question, every single issue, every single thought, every single feeling, every single quandary, every single dilemma is in the Torah. You'll find a source for everything, right? That's the, I'm not going to say, because it's even belittling or diminishing the power of Torah by saying it's beautiful. It is reality. Torah is reality, right? Torah is the reality. Torah is reality. It's the words of Hashem. So by definition, everything's in the Torah. So why am I saying this? Because what are we learning about? We're learning about the battle with the enemy. We're learning about the strategy of the battle with the enemy. How to battle with the enemy. Leave one side open. That's what the message is. Leave one side open so the enemy can escape, whether it be a military strategy for the sake of psychological warfare to weaken, so they shouldn't strengthen their resolve to fight back. That's the Rambam. Or because of mercy, that we as the Jewish nation, the Jewish army, we have to act with mercy towards our enemies even. But it's a advice, mitzvah, for how to deal with the enemy. How to deal with the enemy. Right? Now, how practical is this? Is this really so practical? I mean, unfortunately, you know, yeah, we are seeing today, you know, in Israel and the, you know, the wars of Israel, but, you know, we shouldn't see that frequently. There should only be, you know, it shouldn't happen ever again. And those things should go away completely. But we are always dealing with one enemy. And what's the one enemy? Right? I hear with the resounding, you know, voices, the Yetzer Hara, right? The enemy within, because that's what it's all about. What's the message over here? The message is how to deal with our own enemy within ourselves. That's the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is the enemy within. So we can perhaps take a lesson from this to learn how to deal with our enemy, to use this as a strategy with how to deal with the enemy. Because what is the strategy which is being recommended? Leave a space. Leave a space. What does that mean exactly? So the truth is, Rav Dessler in Michtam Eliyahu elaborates on this, and he says, he explains that when we go back to the story of the Jewish people leaving Mitzrayim, when they first left Mitzrayim, so a very interesting episode takes place. Moshe goes to Paro, and he says to Paro, Hashem wants us to have a 3-day furlough in the desert. To offer sacrifices. Now we all know. I mean, the whole purpose of the stories, the whole everything was leading towards the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, what was Moshe saying to Paro? Was that deception? Was that deceit? Like, what? Why was he a 3-day fellow? What kind of joke is that? A 3-day fellow, we're going to go out into the desert and offer sacrifices. We're going to come back. So, Rav Dessler says that there's something much more deep going on over there. Ein devar meila morim kadei l'ramos as Paro, he says. These words were not to trick Paro. Elenemru klape Yitzram. They were said vis-a-vis the Jewish people's own Yetzahara, their own inclinations. Shiargishu ki'ilu nishara lem derech pesucha losha l'mitzrayim, to be able to give to them, in sync with what we're discussing today in the parasha, to give to them a passage, a way to be able to go back to Mitzrayim, to deal with the Yetzer Hara this way. You see, what does it mean practically? You know, when you close all options, when you burn your bridges, there's a big danger in that, because if you burn your bridges, you can get sucked in. Or not sucked in, you can get overtaken, completely overwhelmed, and lost completely. Psychologically, you need to have, for your own dealing with the Yetzer Hara, a little bit of a Pesach, a little bit of an opening to be able to go back to the behavior. It was placate the Yetzer Hara, to seduce the Yetzer Hara, placate the Yetzer Hara, give in a little bit. You may remember, I told you this a few months ago, story of the stipler. The stipler was a soldier in the Russian army in Siberia, and they had to fight. They had to be in the army for so many years. So a very famous story. So He was on guard duty. He started his guard duty right before Shabbos began. Freezing cold winter. And the previous soldier had taken his coat, the heavy coat, to keep them warm over Shabbos. And he hung the coat on a tree, on the peg of a tree. Now, without going into the halachas of Shabbos right now, one of the laws of Shabbos is not to take things off a tree and put things back on a tree. And that's a halacha. It's a law in Shabbos. So the stipler saw this, saw the coat was there, and the previous guard had put it there, and it was already Shabbos had begun. And he needed it to keep warm. So he you know, didn't know what to do. Should he violate Shabbos and take the coat off there to keep himself warm? Now, obviously, it was pikuach nefesh, a life-threatening situation. Of course, he has to take it off. But he wasn't sure what to do. And what he decided to do, he utilized this trick. What's the trick? He gave in to the Yetzirah. He gave himself a Pesach, gave himself an opening. One side open. What's the one side open in this context? I'll take the coat off in an hour. I'm not depriving myself. I'm not cutting it off cold turkey. I'm not going to take the coat off for the rest of Shabbos. I'm going to take the coat off, but in 1 hour from now, or 20 minutes, whatever time he decides for himself, I'm going to take the coat off in 1 hour. That's leaving one side open to the enemy. Now the Yetzirah is satisfied. He's okay with it. Okay, so he's going to take the coat off in an hour from now. I don't need to chaper him. I don't need to bother him. Once you block off all options, so then the Yetzirah, like the enemy, starts fighting even stronger against you. So that's what he did. So that's what Moshe was doing with the Jewish people. That's what he said to Paro. We want to go for 3 days. It wasn't really to Paro. It was to give the Jewish people an opportunity to go back. For 3 days, we could manage it. We're willing to go into the desert. We're willing to sacrifice ourselves for 3 days because we know we can go back. I'm willing to sacrifice myself for a particular activity because I know I can always change my mind and go back. I know I can change my mind. I have my options, right? I mean, think about this in life. When we allow ourselves to have options, it makes it easier to do things because I know I have an option. You have a backup plan. Right? If I have a backup plan, so I'm willing to take the risk with plan A because I always have plan B as a backup plan. Right? Now that's okay. I mean, sometimes it's necessary to do. Because otherwise, if you don't have the backup plan, you'll rebel and you'll get all flustered and you won't end up doing anything whatsoever. So the backup plan, is the same thing as one side being open for the Yetzirah to be satisfied and be placated with. So that's the That's the message. Well, that is the strategy. And the second point of the Ramban, that you have to have mercy upon the enemy. Very, very important idea in our own internal battles with our Yetzirah, to be compassionate with ourselves, to have mercy upon ourselves. If we have to have mercy upon the enemy, then we have to have mercy upon the enemy within ourselves. This is a lot to be said about this. Just to understand the Yetzirah, again, I've spoken about this many times before, the Yetzirah, the Ra of the Yetzirah, Ra, Reya, Reya is a friend. We have to understand that the purpose of the Yetzirah is to help us to grow, right? The Yetzirah, on the surface, superficial dimension of the Yetzirah, it's a menace, it's a pain, it's a frustration, it's a cause of our downfall. But it was planted inside of us as for our benefit to challenge us to grow. And in fact, the Pasuk says this in Bereishis. It says, the Pesach Chatas Rovates, sin rests at the door. The Pasuk says, Ve'ilecha Tushukasa Ve'ata Chimshla, to you is its desire. It desires you that you should conquer it. This is a beautiful passage in Samson Raphael Hirsch's commentary on the Chumash. Very, very worthwhile looking at. It's in Bereishis Perek Dalet Pasuk Zion, and Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch discussing the Yetzirah. He says Hashem has given sensuality, Yetzirah, an appeal to your senses. Not that it should master and direct you, but you should master and direct it. Not that you should suppress and kill it, and be brutal towards it, but Timshel, regulate it. Regulate it. This is not a posture of brutality and anger and hatred and insidious attempt to kill and destroy the Yetzirah. There's a logic, there's an intelligence in dealing with the Yetzirah. To regulate it, to rule over it and direct it, That is its whole purpose and calling. By you mastering it and guiding it, it achieves its purpose. And that is why it longs to achieve it. For there is not a single natural tendency in man which is in itself either good or bad. A man should be freely affianced to his sensuality so as under his guidance together with it to achieve the highest purpose of purposes of his life. It's an attitude, it's a maturer understanding of the function of the Yetzirah inside of us. It's an asset. It's a painful asset, but it's the asset which stimulates us and motivates us to grow. So, you know, to react to failures and to react to flaws and to blemishes inside of ourselves and stupidities and things like that, and to get angry and to be hateful towards ourselves flies in the face of the entire purpose of why the Yetzirah is within us in the first place. We're not supposed to act with brutality towards our Yetzirah. We have to look at ourselves with compassion and mercy. We have to have, you know, just a sense of sensitivity to understand, to regulate it 100%, but to be self-compassionate in the process. That's the Ramban. That's the Ramban's, you know, message of how, when conquering the city and the country and leaving, you know, the space on the side, out of mercy, if we just map that city, that enemy city, to our enemy within ourselves, have a little bit of mercy upon ourselves. Yes, regulate it, be responsible, and take care of it responsibly, intelligently, but do it with a sense of compassion and sensitivity. There's no place in Judaism for self-flagellation. I can't say it properly. You know what I'm talking about. Self-abuse and self-hate and all that type of stuff. There's no place for that. The enemy is for a purpose. However, we do find a time when we do have to go with full gusto, full force, and burn the bridges. Because you see, what this message is so far is when you're dealing with the Yetzirah, we're dealing with the enemy, don't burn that bridges. Don't burn the enemy's bridges, because if you burn the enemy bridges, he's going to fight back and vanquish you. So that's what this pasuk is telling us. Is there a time, though? We find there is a time. There is a time to burn the bridges. And this is back in the same episode when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. In Parashas Beshalach, says that when Hashem led the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, you know, what was the purpose of leaving Mitzrayim? The purpose of leaving Mitzrayim was to go to Eretz Yisrael. Well, if you look on a map and look at where Mitzrayim is relative to Eretz Yisrael, right? It's just south. We know where it is. It's south west of Eretz Yisrael. You know, just go through Gaza. I mean, that's what the pasuk says, actually. It says in Parashat Beshalach that Hashem did not lead them through, doesn't say Gaza. It says Hashem did not lead them through Eretz Plishtim. You know, Gaza is the land of the Plishtim, the ancient land of the Plishtim. So Hashem did not lead them through Eretz Plishtim, which would be the logical direct route. The pasuk says, "Lo nochem elokim derech Eretz Plishtim ki karav hu," because it was too close. Well, that's paradoxical. On the contrary, that's the reason why they should be led through Plishtim, because it is close to Mitzrayim, to Eretz Yisrael. No, the answer is because it was too close. Too close, and what would be the danger? They would go back. They've run back. At this time in the story of Yetzir Mitzrayim, at that point, once they've left Mitzrayim and they've already gone through a part of the journey, the strategy switches. The strategy switches to no longer give them a return route, a backup plan to go back to Mitzrayim. Hashem wanted them to, yes, at this point, burn their bridges behind them. He wanted to take them into the desert deliberately, to burn the bridges behind them, to make sure they have no backup plan, to not go back over the Kriyas Yam Suf into the desert, much farther distance, far, far away, so they don't have a back. They're really trapped in the desert. They can't go back. Because now, at this point, that was the strategy. The initial strategy, the first approach is give them a Pesach, give them an opening to go back. The second plan, the second stage of the plan, don't give them a way to go back, burn their bridges behind them. And that was the plan. That's what happened. So Rav Dessler writes on this, you know, on this, so to speak, second phase of warfare against the Yetzirah. Second phase, Rav Dessler writes, he says, Lo yistapik bekabolos. A person should not rely upon commitments. Don't rely upon commitments in your life. Now, what he means by this is that if a person, you know, leaves themselves in a circumstance, in a situation, in a place of life, which gives them opportunities to go different ways, backup plans, to go back to their old ways, to make it easy for them, but to make a commitment in that context, it's so tenuous. It's so tenuous to try to make commitments in the context of where you're in your original place. If you're in your original place, in your individual environment, to make commitments that you're going to change in that environment, very, very difficult. Don't rely upon commitments. Rather, yeshane sevivoso matzovo. It's better to change where you are, change your environment, change your situation. Get out of there. Burn your bridge behind you. Go to a different place. Go into a different situation because you're trying to change and to grow in the place, the situation you're in. It's so difficult. It's so hard because the Yetzirah is just going to constantly bring you back there. Don't rely upon commitments. Yeshane sevivoso. Change your place. Burn your bridges behind you, actually, but the ever till they find you. Make yourself force. You have no choice. Now, it's true that the Yetzirah is going to be also more fortified to fight against you. But this is why Rav Dessler says it's the second phase of attack against the Yetzirah. You may initially placate the Yetzirah, seduce the Yetzirah, but there's a point which comes in life when you have to say, enough is enough. I've just got to change my situation. I've got to burn my bridge behind me. He said, the Torah is teaching us over here in that episode with regard to not being led directly through the land of Plishtim. The Torah is teaching us, shekedai shenivcha b'derech rechoka. Sometimes it's more preferred to choose the more distant path, the far off path, the hard path. V'afil lechaz derech yom midbaris, even go into the desert, into a difficult place, difficult places, in order to detach yourself behind and to cut off the bridge, he says, "Lenasek macharenu as a gesher," to cut off the bridge, to detach ourselves, to prevent ourselves to be able to go back to the original behavior. Kedai shenakabel atzmenu, it's worthwhile to accept upon ourselves avoda rabba, a hard effort, an initial blast of a hard effort, and toil alakira by taking ourselves out of that situation. Vasaviva and the environment, the old environment which we're in. Rak leman nachsan, so we can just ultimately and finally close behind ourselves the path to sin and the old ways which we are used to. This is what he says. So the place, there is the time for burning the bridges. Change, it's difficult. And it requires like a major effort in that moment. If you've tried and tried with the Yetzirah up until this point, you placated the Yetzirah, you've used the other strategy, leaving a Pesach, an opening to be able to go back. You've tried that. You know what? I've tried that. And I've, you know, done that for X number of days, years, whatever it may be. Now the time has come when I'm going to finally, once and for all, make a significant change and burn my bridge behind me so that I'm in a brand new situation which augments and facilitates and allows me to become the person I want to become.